Every year, on the 16th of January, is the day of Acharya Puja, commemorating the passing of Venerable Ajahn Chah, the great teacher of Wat Nongpa Phong forest tradition. Wat Nongpa Phong itself was founded by Venerable Ajahn Chah in 1954. This year makes it about 72 years since then, which happens to be the same age as myself. Ajahn Chah began living there in 1954. Ajahn Chah was a disciple of Venerable Ajahn Ginari and Venerable Ajahn Tongrat, both of whom were direct disciples of Venerable Ajahn Mun. Before in 1975, there weren't yet many branch monasteries, perhaps only about 10 or so. Nowadays, there are more than 400 branches, including many overseas, in Europe, Australia and New Zealand. In the Ajahn Chah monasteries, there are beautiful standards of monastic practice. Monks and novices are trained to strictly uphold the Vinaya, the monk's discipline, and to live with respect and reverence as a foundation. Mutual respect and discipline are blessings of one's life. Ajahn Chah constantly emphasized this in his teachings. As for the mind, he taught in ways that gave rise to wisdom, and to just the right amount. His Dhamma teachings were often short and direct, somewhat like Zen. Some people would come carrying great suffering. Ajahn Chah wouldn't immediately teach that person anything, because his mind was already burdened with suffering. Instead, he handed him a bucket and told him to hold it. That layperson then held the bucket full of water without putting it down. When the right moment came, when the heaviness in his heart had softened, and also being near Ajahn Chah made him feel at ease, when he was ready to see Dhamma, Ajahn Chah asked, "Is it heavy holding that bucket?" The question referred both to the body and the mind, in which he replied, "It's heavy." Then Ajahn Chah said, "Well, if it's heavy, why don't you put it down?" So he put the bucket down, and at the same time his burden of the emotion dropped away as well. It was like a small moment of seeing Dhamma. Clinging and attachment is something heavy. If one has wisdom, then one will put it down. This goes back to the Buddha's teaching, helping people gain wisdom and to see and know the Dhamma. The Buddha's disciples took these methods and taught in ways that would awaken wisdom. Venerable Ajahn Chah also taught people to reduce their views and conceit. 50 or 60 years ago, development in Thailand had not yet reached the northeastern area. Progress was mainly in Bangkok and the central regions. When people from abroad or from the central regions came to practice, Ajahn Chah taught them to put down views, conceit, and worldly education. Even bachelor's degrees and master's degrees, he said, should be left at the gate of the monastery. Don't bring them inside, or the views and conceit would arise. Those who were born in the rural northeast of Thailand had accumulated much faith and spiritual merit in the Dhamma and came to ordain, but they had little formal education. Seeing Dhamma is seeing suffering, having suffering so they could see the Dhamma. They had time and opportunity to practice, to ordain, and to develop themselves and their minds. At that time, society revolved mostly around farming. Life circled around rice fields and manual labor. Opportunities for worldly advancement were limited. Though material resources were low, their Dhamma capital was very high. Venerable Ajahn Chah also taught to understand conventional language, about conventional reality and ultimate reality, about how names do not exist in reality. Take the word salt or glur in Central Thai. In truth, there is no such thing as salt, only natural elements. In the northeastern dialect, it is called kia. In some places, it sounds like miang. Different words, same thing. Like a water glass. In Thai, it has another word. In southern Thai, there are different words. Every language differs. Even English has American accents and British accents. This is the nature of conventional reality and ultimate reality. It is not that I am better than them. That is views and conceit. That person doesn't speak clearly. It's not like that. If it's like that, we're clinging to identity and a sense of self arises. So we must put the self down, and this concerns the mind. Thus there is discipline and structure on one side, and letting go of self on the other. Together they are morality, vinaya, and dhamma. We come to the fundamentals. Ajahn Chah taught strict practice, but also not so extreme. One had to know letting go as well. Everything is impermanent, unsatisfactory, and not self. He taught development of the mind, to gain calm, and to have mindfulness. Even though we are the later generations of disciples, it is amazing how monks still gather with deep faith in Venerable Ajahn Chah. Every 16th of January, people prepare for a whole year to come, both from Thailand and overseas. It's truly remarkable. If we think back to the Buddha's time, Venerable Sariputta would wander in the forest with 500 monks. Uruvela Kassapa, Gaya Kassapa, Nadi Kassapa had 500, 300, and 200 followers respectively. The three Kassapa brothers had a great following. Similarly, in Ajahn Chah's time, 600 monks gathered for his birthday. By 1976, there were already over 500 monks attending for his birthday. On Marga Puja Day and Katina ceremonies, monks would gather to listen to Dhamma. Venerable Ajahn Chah would teach, and then senior disciples would teach the lay people after. They practiced Nessa Chika, sitting practicing through the night without lying down, and refraining from indulging in various forms of entertainment. Ajahn Chah laid down the principles of Dhamma. Instead of worldly celebration and entertainment, they celebrated with Dhamma. Giving Dhamma surpasses all other gifts. He led his disciples in practicing and doing the monastic duties. Monks were trained in alms round, morning and evening chanting, and communal duties, doing it in harmony, starting and finishing together. This has been preserved to this day, truly remarkable indeed. Eventually, lay people came in the thousands, turning it into a major event in Ubon Ratchathani province. This isn't easily found. It requires one's faith, time, effort, resources and dedication, everything. People came to camp out and practice meditation, creating great merit. Monks and novices gathered, and people of virtue and Dhamma gathered, and the monks would give Dhamma. It is remarkable. The food and drinks are abundant, because everyone has a heart of generosity, bringing offerings and food of all kinds. But in the early days of the monastery, the first generation of monks sometimes ate only a small ball of rice and bananas. They said that the bananas weren't filling enough, so they had to eat the whole fruit, including the peel, because there wasn't much food to eat. The food was scarce. In my time, the small bananas were divided into four portions, so they could get to everyone. There were no large bananas then. They were hard to find. Yet monks and novices had a high level of forbearance, because they lived according to the Dhamma and didn't need anything abundant on the outside. In these early days, there was no electricity and no running water. We had to fetch water from wells. We survived through patience and the need to train our minds. Especially, the mind of Venerable Ajahn Chah had the energy of goodwill, had power, had wisdom and Dhamma to teach the way to liberation from suffering, so we would diligently practice. As a result, samadhi, concentration, and panya, wisdom, arose. As for me, there was once Ajahn Chah called me over and told me to stay in a kuti in front of his, and so I would practice walking meditation and sitting meditation, and he would watch me, constantly keeping an eye on me for a month. I also had to control the mind. It's not just about walking meditation. The mind must be thinking Buddho. My mind might wander into the city. Then the Dhamma of Ajahn Chah would come and correct it. My mind couldn't wander to other things. I had to maintain continuous mindfulness. Ajahn Chah was also so kind. There was one time I was traveling to Bangkok on a sleeper train with him. Venerable Ajahn Chah was sleeping on the lower bunk because he couldn't get to the top bunk because he was too big. There was space on the upper bunk, right? I had the duty to attend to him. Ajahn Chah told me to go sleep on the top bunk. A nun, go sleep up there. Oh, if I slept there, I'd probably go to hell. That night, if I slept, I'd be burning inside, like I was in hell. I probably wouldn't sleep at all. I had to sleep on the floor. He told me 2 or 3 times to go up. No, I'm not going up. I'll sleep down on the floor. I was careful with my mindfulness. If Ajahn Chah woke up, I had to wake up immediately. As soon as he went to the bathroom or moved, I had to be on alert. I had to be already awake. I couldn't indulge in sleeping. If Ajahn Chah woke up, he would have to walk over me and go to the bathroom. If I didn't notice, that would be really bad. Or sometimes I'd give him a massage. When traveling with him to a branch monastery, I would offer him a massage at night. Once around 11 p.m, Ajahn Chah seemed to be falling asleep, so I stopped massaging. As soon as I stopped, he would wake up again. I would continue massaging him then. And then when he seemed to be asleep, entering a meditative state. But as soon as I stopped massaging, he would wake up again. I thought, maybe Ajahn Chah is teaching me something. I realized he was testing my attentiveness. Is it sincere? Is it true that I was fulfilling my duties as an attendant? Or would I sleep before Ajahn Chah? I ended up massaging until 2:30 in the morning. Once I was certain Ajahn Chah was already asleep, I slowly moved to lie down in front of the room. Sleeping in the front, I was also afraid that I would not be mindful, so I lay down across the doorway. If he moved, I would wake immediately. At around 6 o'clock in the morning, I heard Ajahn Chah's voice giving a talk in the hall. I was very startled. Huh? How could Ajahn Chah be giving a talk? I was lying there right near him. So I slowly peeked through the door. Oh, he was still sleeping. They were playing a cassette, the talk from last night. I could breathe easier. My lungs felt full of oxygen. I constantly felt like I was failing my duties. Sometimes I'd have problems preparing the medicine for him. I might forget to prepare a particular medicine, and I'd think a lot about it. I forgot to prepare the medicine for him. Oh, his body is deteriorating. He needs to do benefit for the monks, novices, and lay people. I'm not doing well. It's not right. I blame myself as well. I too was falling to hell. This was because my thoughts were wrong. Because of wrong thinking. Especially sometimes when I went to shave his head. I lit the candles, then shaved his head. I didn't dare to shave quickly, and did it carefully and slowly. Ajahn Chah said, "Hey, you're shaving too slowly." But when I shaved his hair quickly, I cut him a little. Just a little cut. Oh, some blood came out. He said, "It's like when eating rice and then biting the owner's tongue." He said if it were him, he would have finished shaving two heads already. That's what he said. He could shave quickly, using a blade. He was very skilled. I didn't dare. I was afraid I would cut him. When I walked behind him later, he would touch the wound, and I felt, oh, he's touching that spot, but it hurts my heart so much. And then, at the time when Ajahn Chah was sick and couldn't speak, no one dared to shave his head for fear of cutting him. Well, I wanted to redeem myself because I cut him a little bit last time, so this time I carefully shaved his head, neatly, without any cuts. Nowadays it's better. There are razors designed not to cut. In the past there weren't. He taught us to be mindful. Even while he was sick, monks and novices would question and sometimes argue because they wanted to attend on him in the best way, so arguing was natural. On days when the monks and novices were not harmonious and argued, he wouldn't eat. When we fed him, he wouldn't eat. He would just keep the food in his mouth. The monks and novices had to ask for his forgiveness. "Please forgive us, Venerable. Please forgive us." The monks had to have metta, goodwill for one another first. And then Ajahn Chah would eat. Ajahn Chah knew everything. This shows he was teaching. Even while he was sick, he still taught. To be harmonious, to have goodwill. Even in illness, Ajahn Chah taught. He used his sick body to teach. There was a time he was sleeping, and they tried to measure his blood pressure, and it couldn't be measured. The lay doctor panicked, he couldn't measure it. Ajahn Chah had withdrawn the mind from the body. When he withdrew the mind, the blood pressure went to zero. If blood pressure is zero, that means a person has died, right? But this was because he had withdrawn the mind. So they said, "Don't interfere with him, let him rest." So these are just some small stories I've shared with you today. May you grow in blessings.